Okay, welcome to episode 12 of the Never Mind Anything podcast. A podcast has been created to keep you occupied during the virus lockdown. My name is Tony Esmond, writer of the Hoare Chronicles, Cockney Kung Fu and Atomic Hercules. Today's guest is a comics fan. I'm going to say recently a comics reviewer and also a big 2000 AD guy. It's Gary Hill. How you doing, Gaz?
Oh yeah, Tony, I'm good, thank you, mate.
I'm right in saying that. I know you've recently sort of started reviewing, or you started a sort of blog post about comics, is
yeah.
That right?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, I'm involved in the sort of 2000 AD community since I got back into comics. And what I'd noticed from a few of the get-togethers I'd organise is there's a hell of a lot of the guys only read 2000 AD.
Yeah, they do.
You know what it's like. They're absolutely voracious for the 2000 AD.
Yeah.
And sometimes nothing else will do. And for me, sort of listening to sort of, you know, the Awesome Comics podcast, that kind of thing, getting into Comic House, it's opened up a whole new world for me of different types of comic. So my idea with the kind of blog, and I'm not pretending to be anything special at all, it's just me saying, look, I've read this. You might like it if you like 2000 AD, you know, and try and...
Okay, that's an interesting approach, because we're only going to win it if we're all in it, I suppose, is the answer to that one, isn't it? And they're a force to be reckoned with. We were just talking about it, aren't they? The old 2000 AD crowd. Yeah.
Yeah. They're like the old Millwall fans in the 80s.
They are a bit. I've seen a few Millwall games in my time, my friend. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. At the old den, not the new den, not this rubbish new... Fancy place, the old den. Yeah, I know what you mean. That's good. Yeah, no, and you're exactly right. Did you do the 40th? I can't remember whether you went. Did you go the 40th?
No, I wasn't sort of back into it for the 40th.
Okay.
I mean, my sort of story is it's the typical kind of 2000 AD fan. I was born in 1970.
Right. Proper age, exactly the right age.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, grew up with comics was the first thing I can remember reading. Dandy, Bees, you know, the whole works.
Yeah.
And obviously you grow up and there's like Warlord, Victor, Battle, and then 2000 AD came on the scene.
Yeah.
And I sort of stayed with that from sort of 77 through to about 88.
Okay.
And then it's like, you know, the old story, beer, women, and you think, right, I better pack in reading comics now.
Yeah. You hear a lot of people who drop it when they're at uni and stuff because that's the exact reason, because they're too busy spending their money on booze and chicks. Yeah, or other sexes are available, apparently. So what got you back into it, Gaz?
Well, I was talking to my wife about it, and, you know, like how we used to love comics and that kind of thing. And she's a very good one. She sort of puts away things in the memory bank. And then come the Christmas of 2017, she got me the Christmas 1977 edition of 2000 AD.
Ah.
You know, it's still got the old sort of newsagent scrawl on the top. And it just took me right back. And it was even talking about this new film that was coming out called Star Wars.
Yeah, I remember those issues.
So that was a bit of a sort of a trip down memory lane. I thought, you know, what's it still like now? And sort of just gradually got back into it. And then, you know, like I say, get a little bit more of an idea of what else is out there. And it's a whole new world, isn't it?
Yeah, and like they say, you and your bank account were never the same again.
Oh, yeah. Jesus Christ, yeah. There might be one or two things I've perhaps sort of ordered and hoped the wife hasn't noticed, that kind of thing.
Well, we've all been there, my friend, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And before I forget, congratulations. So you've had a recent addition to the Hill clan. That sounds like a cool clan. Called, is it Elora? Is that her name? I forget.
Elora, yeah. She's a month old yesterday, actually, yeah.
Well, look at that. Already dressing her as Batman, I see, which I was... I just a quick look at your Facebook page before we come on.
We've got the whole Batman, we've got the Superman, we're going for
it. Well, with my son, I just sort of held his eyes open and made him read comics. It was like a torture. He still reads them now, but mind you, I still pay for them, and he's in his 20s, but you know what I mean? He's still reading them. That's good.
Okay, it's all a plan.
Yeah, it's all a plan. So the aim of today is to give an overview of a comic or a series in the hope that people will both find our conversation interesting and not too boring and head out and buy the series and in doing so keep themselves occupied in these trying times. I asked Gary to come on and I suggested if he wanted to think of a comic and he came up with a proper watch out, there's flying brains, the gloves are off. I don't know what it says about you, Gaz, but I've certainly read it, enjoyed it in the past. What do you want to let us know what you came up with as a choice?
Yeah, so it's Garth Ennis's run on the Punisher Max, and I've actually gone for it was the In the Beginning stories.
Yep. So it's issue 1 to 6, which is the one that famously features Microchip. Is that the right? Is that right?
Yes, that's the one. Yeah, yeah.
That's quite a series. I've got to tell you.
Oh yeah, I absolutely love it.
Yeah. So I'll give a little rundown. So it came out in March 2004. Can you believe it's that long ago?
I know. Yeah.
It's terrible. Ridiculous. Yeah. Written, like by you say, by Garth Ennis. I'm a big fan of his. We'll talk a bit about his other books as well, I'm sure. Pencils by Louis LaRosa. Inks by Tom Palmer. Colours by Dean White. Letters by just an awful number of people that I didn't write down in my notes. covers, absolutely outstanding covers by Tim Bradstreet as well. Really loved them. And editor was Alex Alonso, who was a big champion of the Max line. This is what's called Punisher Max. For those that don't know what that means, the Punisher has had a sort of somewhat checkered publication history, which we'll probably get to in a second. But what was your first exposure to the Punisher, Gaz? Was it this series or was it something else?
Yeah, it was the Max series for sure. I mean, right. Again, parking back to the 70s, I was never really that exposed to Marvel at the time. I don't know if it was just round by where we lived in the you know, in the Black Country, there wasn't that much of it in the deep depths of the...
You're not from Dudley, are you? You're a Dudley boy or...?
Wolverhampton.
Okay, good. Yeah.
So, I was never really exposed to that. It was always the more, like I say, the traditional British ones.
Yeah.
So, the superheroes had never really done it for me. But then when I read, you know, you've got to get into Ennis's Punisher, right? You know, I thought, well, okay, let's have a look at it. Because I'd read Preacher and the first three volumes of that and thought, well, it's got to be good, you know. And I wasn't disappointed.
Now, that's funny because Preacher was him and Steve Dillon. And obviously, is it Welcome Back, Frank? I always forget the name of this. It's Welcome Back, Frank, isn't it? Was the one that he did with Dillon, which he refers to as a sort of Looney Tunes version of the Punisher.
Yeah,
when he said that, it clicked with me. It is, isn't it? It's all kinds of weirdness going on in that one.
Yeah. Well, I've not seen them. I have read him sort of describing it as that. And said, you know, he feels that sort of merry melodies, music should be playing in the background, you know.
Yeah, as you really read it. Is. But the thing is with the Max is it was kind of a new thing. It was kind of a project where they wanted to make it more realistic. This one ran 75 issues and an annual. Ennis didn't write the whole thing, but a big chunk of it. It had a more realistic Frank Castle and one who ages in real time.
Yeah,
which is
a
bit like Dread, I suppose, in a way.
Yeah, definitely, without the rejuve.
Yeah. And Frank's got that. I can see why you might like Frank if you're a Dread fan, because he's got that sort of unstoppable personality, isn't he? He's got that that complete belief in his own twisted belief system, I suppose. You know?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, Garth Ennis has, you know, referred to it in the past that he was influenced by the Dirty Harry type character as well.
Yeah.
And you can really sort of see that in this, you know, and that's the sort of films, you know, I grew up with. That was my benchmark for what a man should be in this sort of situation. And the Punisher, you can see where he's got that influence working for him.
And this is really that edge of it, I have to say. Was this your first Punisher, but was it your first Ennis as well, was it? Or
So Preacher was first.
Right. Not 2000 AD, or had you, I suppose he hadn't been there when you dropped off.
That's it, He came in after.
Very soon after, I think, wasn't it? Would have been quite soon after that, 88. When it was Troubled Souls, that was like 90, was it maybe?
Yeah, it was early 90s, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, there's still a lot of 2000 AD, you know, I'm sort of catching up with. And but I read that, sort of Ennis thought he himself didn't enjoy his Dread work. He just felt there was two parts to it.
Yeah, he's famously said, I'll keep reading Dread as long as Wagner keeps writing it.
the canon.
Yeah, exactly. So Ennis was, he's a really interesting guy to watch interview. Obviously, I've been watching a few YouTube videos whilst doing this sort of project, and there's a lot of people who are very full of themselves, put it that way. Cough, cough, Grant Morrison. Do you know what I mean? But when you watch a video with Garth Ennis, he's very sort of self-deprecating. He's he's a very honest but likable chap.
Very much so.
And when I was looking through his sort of back catalogue, and you've got, like you say, Preacher, you've got The Boys. I mean, how much has The Boys blown up in the last couple of years with the series and everything?
That is amazing.
You've got Dread, Punisher, Hitman. Hitman's a classic. Well, that's not a film. I don't know. That's amazing. His Nick Fury stuff, his crossed stuff is just like wacky. It's wackily disgusting in a way. But,
really?
Yeah. But he started in Crisis. So he, not in Crisis, in the magazine Crisis. There was a Crisis tour, as I understand it, that came to Northern Ireland. And he came up, he walked up, I think it was McManus who was on the tour, I think, and he approached him and said, you know, would you be interested in a political story about Northern Ireland? And McManus sort of said yes, and even Innes himself said, I didn't think he really believed that I would do anything, you know. And he sent something in, and it got accepted, and he was kind of on a roll from then.
Yeah. You
know, it's quite interesting.
Troubled Souls,
yeah.
Yeah.
I saw him describe it as the least appalling thing on the pile of submissions, which goes to show how, you know, sort of funny he is. But, yeah, so born in Northern Ireland, born in County Down in 1970, same year as you. There you go.
Yeah.
He was... I've heard him talk a couple of times about how he wasn't hooked into the industry at all. He wasn't one of these people. You see this now, don't you? You see people friending people and meeting them, you know, trying to have a drink with them at conventions in order to get in the industry. And there's a lot of that sort of networking thing going on. But he wasn't networked. He said the first time he ever saw professionals was the first sort of UK comic convention he went to. And I think he'd already at that point had something published, you know. He, in the same way that Pat Mills is, he's very sort of anti-superhero. He says, I just can't relate to them. He says, I can't write them. And the nearest thing he said he could come up with was Punisher, which does kind of work as that sort of opposites, doesn't it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I could imagine him doing something like Pat's done with, you know, Martial Law.
Kind of The Boys is a bit like that, isn't it, when you look at it? Yeah,
absolutely, yeah.
Just with more knobs, I suppose.
Yeah. There is a bit of hero gasm and that kind of thing.
Yeah, oh my God, yeah. That was going somewhere, wasn't it? We're not doing a boys podcast, but I have to say that was a real mixed... I really enjoyed The Boys. I liked it all. But it jumped about a bit, didn't it? I know the Butcher Baker miniseries that came towards the end of it was quite a touching thing about him being a soldier at Goose Green and, you know, in the Falklands War and stuff.
It really was, yeah. His old backstory with his old man, knocking him out, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Of course, we've got Dear Becky, I think it's coming out in... about Butcher's wife.
Oh, is it? I didn't realise
that. Was due, I believe, for April, because I was keeping an eye out for it. Due in April. I think obviously the whole COVID thing has and those things with Diamond have thrown everything out a little bit. But yeah, in May it should be the start of that sort of arc about his wife and the backstory there.
Oh, okay, I didn't realise that. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the storyline for this book. So it opens on that, what I like to think of as the sort of classic Punisher thing, where he's attacking funeral stroke, restaurant stroke, birthday party full of mob bosses and wise guys, you know, the Italian mob.
Absolutely, yeah.
And from moment one, he sort of rocks up and just blows people's brains out almost, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's got the M60 and just opens that up and away he goes, isn't it?
And there is literal... Luis La Rosa does well. There's literal brain matter flying across the page in more than one issue of this, actually. Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I read a little bit about Luis La Rosa, and, you know, he loves 80s action films, he says, and you can really see that influence here, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And so from that point onwards, it becomes... it's an interesting story. It's fairly straightforward with a lot of character work in it, but it's... There's the CIA who are after finding Frank, and you realise the reason they're after him is because they want to employ him. They want to make him a sort of one-man war, essentially, which he kind of is. A one-man war wherever they point him.
Yeah.
On the other side are the mob who want to get revenge for the killing all the bosses, and they import a couple of hoods, one called Pitsy, who's like a pit bull, an older guy, but just like, I think he refers to him as... Popeye at one point, I think he says.
It's
kind of a good description of him. And the other guy is a guy called Ink, who is called that because he killed someone with a pen. Who looks a bit like Jean Reno. He's got that sort of weird hitman sort of glasses, but slightly dangerous thing going on.
I'm assuming kind of look,
yeah. But the other twist to it, and the big one that I didn't see coming, because obviously at the time this character had been killed in the regular universe, I think, off the top of my head, but in the Max universe, which at the time was kind of disconnected, was Microchip appears. David Linus Lieberman is Microchip's real name. He was created in Punisher issue 4 by Mike Baron and Klaus Janson. Mike Baron is a fucking genius, I have to say. I love Mike's stuff. He's nuts. I mean, he's kind of the American Ennis with the madness that he does. I was reading, I think it was, I can't remember which Punisher series it was, but there's one episode where Microchip goes to Fat Camp,
Christ.
So he can slim down and be more involved in, you know, the fight against crime with Punisher.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it sort of degenerates into the fact that he discovers that the it's actually a front for an amphetamine selling drugs gang. And of course the Punisher then turns up and kills everyone. And that would fit in a Punisher story by Ennis, I think. You know, I think there's a similar sensibility.
Yeah.
But of course he's introduced to the story on the side of the CIA, isn't he? Which, did you find that? Did you have a history of Microchip? I suppose you didn't at that point, did you?
My sort of history with Microchip would be from the TV series.
Ah, of course.
They introduce him in there, really. But apart from that, no.
Yeah, because there's a familiarity. There's a, you know, Punisher never has anyone on his side. There's the female Punisher in the Rucker series. He's the odd person, but very rarely. You know, he's just on his own. If you believe Dolph Lundgren, in a sort of sewer with a candle. You know, sharpening a knife all the time. But and Microchip was this guy, and he turns up, and he becomes part and parcel of kidnapping the Punisher, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's the one he's got that edge, hasn't he? Because he recognises him. He's got that couple of seconds drop on him when obviously he shoots him, and then it leaves us to the next issue to understand what he shot him with.
Yeah, that's right. So that's really, really nice bit of art and a really nice bit of storytelling that LaRosa does there. And let's not forget Tom Palmer as well. But when he gets out the back of the van, and you all the way through, he keeps telling these CIA people, "Don't worry, I can get it done." And they keep calling him a fat fuck, that sort of thing, don't they? And he just gets out of the van and says, "Oh, you know, you better be ready."
Yeah.
And he just says, "Frank," and Frank looks over, and he's standing behind a car, and he pulls out a shotgun and shoots him with a sort of dum-dum bullets or something.
It's rubber bullets, isn't it?
Yeah.
The old army ones. Yeah.
And
but of course. You don't know that, do you? Straight away, you think, Jesus Christ, he's killed the Punisher.
Yeah, and in the old days, you'd have to wait till a month to find out what happened.
Right, yeah.
I really like that. I really like the relationship between the two of them. And the final issue is like one third just them talking, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. That's sort of, you really find out this is probably the nearest thing to a friend he's ever had, you know, since he's become the Punisher, if you like.
Yeah. So, a little bit about Louis LaRosa. I really like his stuff, actually. American-born artist, born in Georgia in America. He's probably best known for his, since the resurgence or the rebooting of Valiant, he's done Shadow Man, Exo Man of War, and Bloodshot, which I've read all of them, and they're all very good. He's done some other Punisher work. His pages for the Punisher regularly do about $1,000 on Comic Art Fans. I was looking up, because I like his art. I was thinking, oh, I wonder how much they are. And they're about $1,000 a piece. They're very sort of fully rendered pencil detail, I would say, realistic in style, would you say? Or
yeah, I mean, his Insta is amazing, just a flick through that. The quality, let's say lots of just pencil work, not inked, but it looks amazing. Yeah.
Look at us 50-year-olds talking about Insta.
Oh, no, what's wrong
with it? Is he on TikTok, Gaz? I don't know, I haven't looked on that one yet. We'll have a look
I
later.
I don't know what TikTok is.
So sort of overly rendered, not overly rendered, very rendered.
Yeah.
And inked by Tom Palmer. Tom Palmer being like the daddy of inking, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
He specialises in inking people often with a sort of realistic style. You've got Butch Geiss. He does quite a lot with Neil Adams.
Yeah.
He was the definitive inker, I would say, probably for Gene Colan when he worked on Tomb of Dracula, which is a book I can highly recommend. Have you read that, have you guys? Or?
I've not, no. So I'm very much on that journey of still finding these ones, so I'll take that to heart. Yeah.
That's very much a sort of... It's like a... Cross from a Hammer horror film and a soap opera
nice.
with Dracula as a central character, and it lasted like 70 issues or something. It's a good series to read. I watched an interview with him. If you find this, it's called Down to Draw. Down and then the number two draw. Down to Draw is a YouTube channel, and there's some great interviews with Tom on there. I was watching one this afternoon, and he talks a lot about inking Neil Adams and inking John Buscema. And he says, I could have made, it's interesting because he said, I could have made a lot of money in advertising he's been in comics since the 60s, I think. Yeah. He said, but comics are a good vacation, he says, which is nice. I kind of like that.
Yeah, definitely.
There you go. So a little bit about the art. We'll go back to the story. So is this the kind of story that you like? I mean, if you're a 2000 AD guy, you're more... Are you more space age, or is the grittiness of it something that appeals to you, guys?
Definitely the grittiness, like I say, growing up in the 70s, things like, you know, Dirty Harry, the Clint Eastwood films, and then moving on to the Arnie, that kind of thing, just blood and guts, no political correctness, just everybody dies. That's what sort of really sort of attracted me to Ennis's work, because he just doesn't give a toss really about sort of being politically correct.
Some of the dialogue in this, I wrote down one piece of dialogue because I thought we'll talk about dialogue at some point, but the fucks with the fucking faggot machine gun. That's a sentence.
That's pitsy, isn't it? Yeah,
it is. Yeah, well done. Yeah, I just laughed out loud. I thought, the least, you know, the sweariest, politically incorrect, aggressive, gun-toting sentence, and it's only like 9 words or something. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. And what I like as well is, you know, his sort of female character, the CIA agent, you know, and there's no sort of petite sort of lady who's being just used as a pair of tits in there. You know, she's as bad as him, really.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, she's kind of into being in the CIA and, like, shooting people because she sort of gets off on it.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I mean sexually. I don't mean just through a thrill.
Yeah.
At one point, she says they're following the Punisher right at the start, aren't they? And he gets does he put an M60 in the boot of his car? And she says, I can see him. He's just put an M60 in the boot of the car. And the bloke she's with goes, all right, okay, what's he going to use that for? And she goes, I wonder if he's got a big dick.
Yeah, that's it. Just nice to fuck blokes with big dicks.
Yeah.
And then she's listening at the door when he's being interviewed, and she just wants to hear if he's got that kind of gravelly voice. And again, she's asked why, because it gets me wet.
Yeah.
Which is great.
I must develop a more gravelly voice for this podcast.
Yeah.
I think from now
on. I don't think the Black Country does it for women that way.
Well, you're very popular now with the likes of Peaky Blinders. It's quite a cool place to be from, isn't it?
Mind you saying that, I can't watch that because of the accents, because they go all over the place.
Yeah.
But yeah, it has got a bit of a cachet about it there. So, never know me luck.
Yeah, you might be right. Yeah. Head over to America. They won't know the difference. It'd be fine.
No, that's it.
Yeah. Cool. So let's a little bit about the Punisher, a little bit, and then we'll talk about a couple of the twists and stuff like that go on in it. Yeah. So the Punisher was created by Jerry Conway, John Romita Sr., and Ross Andrew in an Amazing Spider-Man issue 129, cover dated February 1974. If you've got that, you're a lucky man. He'd been honest. This, funny enough, as sort of coincidences happen, I'm a big fan of the Mac Bolan novels. Have you ever heard of them? They're a sort of series of sort of trashy novels that came out in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And I think in America they were called The Executioner.
I've heard of The Executioner.
Yeah, I think they got a rename over here for some reason. I've got some bit of both. You buy things off eBay, you get them from all over the place. But the and they were written in most part by Don Pendleton. I think there was a bit of ghostwriting going on. And it was basically a soldier who executes the mob, is how it starts.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and Conway's been... Yeah, I think Conway's quite honest about it, though. I think he said, no, that's where he got it from.
Yeah.
I think he said, I think in one of the issues there's a little mention of it. I think they say a mention of it. Now, Punisher is, if you don't know, I'm sure you do, he's a character whose wife and kids were killed in front of him. He's a Vietnam vet. And he basically focuses 100% just on executing criminals. That's the idea. The costume has been played about with. Initially, it was more of a sort of spandexy thing with a big skull on it.
Didn't he have white boots and that kind of thing?
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
And I think the teeth of the skeleton were like, were they like nunchucks or something like that? Or, you know, something. Yeah. Stan, the mighty Stan Lee, who came up with the name, apparently, because I think Conway wanted to call him the Assassin. And Stan decided he didn't like that. And I don't know if you know this, but the Punisher, this is the second Punisher in the Marvel Universe, because the first one was one of Galactus's robots.
Oh, right.
Believe it or not, yeah. And Stan said, oh, you can have that name, and he gave it to him. And I think Conway was quite surprised by his popularity. He thought, it's always the way, isn't it? That's why Dredd's popular, you know, that's why these sort of characters are popular. Even some of the, like, Lobo or someone, you know.
Yeah.
We're drawn to the psycho, do you think?
I think it's that thing that, you know, you've been pissed off by your boss and you have these fantasies of being able to walk in there and get your revenge.
Remind me never to be your boss, Gaz. I don't know.
Not as my lovely boss now would have that.
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? I suppose alongside stuff like Death Wish as well. Which was, where was Death Wish? Late 70s, early 80s?
Yeah, I was going to say it's got to be around 79, 80, wasn't it? Yeah,
I reckon. Yeah, and that sort of anti-hero thing was popular.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's what the sort of people like, isn't it? You know, that say that the anti-hero that can just sort of will to win that little bit and beat the bad guys.
Yeah, I think so. So he had he came and went. He was a guest star in a couple of issues. He had a black and white magazine written by Archie Goodwin. Stephen Grant and Mike Zeck did the famous miniseries, and then it went on to an ongoing series with Mike Baron and Klaus Janson and a number of other people. Jim Lee drew some. He guested in the comic series The Nam. If you've ever read that, that's a great Vietnam series. He's in a reboot of the Thunderbolts. Weirdly, I think he gets off with Elektra in that one, off the top of my head.
Oh right, okay.
Well, it seemed a bit out of character, but there you go. He's in Civil War. Famously refuses to fight back against Captain America, which is a really great scene, I think.
Yeah.
So he's about. I mean, he's jumped. Story wise, he's jumped about. We've had Welcome Back, Frank, which is not the wackiest of his stuff, because we've had Frankencastle, where they turn him into sort of Frankenstein.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah, we've had Space Punisher, or is it Punisher in Space? I can't remember. Space Punisher, maybe. So he has been all over the place, which I kind of like. But to me, this is where he belongs. He belongs in an R-rated crime drama, you know.
Yeah, it absolutely works, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So the other thing I was reading, I thought I might ask you about, is the change in tone. So we had Welcome Back, Frank, which is as you said, is a sort of Looney Tunes kind of thing.
Yeah.
But this was post 9/11, and he's quite honest about talking about this. He says he came out post 9/11, and he said the world had changed, and people weren't looking for that wackiness. They wanted something.
Yeah, definitely. I think you know that the tone definitely reflects that change, doesn't it? Perhaps it's that sort of want for revenge that.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah,
did at that time as well, and he sort of reflected that. And obviously, Ennis, he sort of lives there, doesn't he, and loves the place. And so,
yeah.
You know, it's sort of paying homage to those people a little bit for him.
That's a good point, man. Actually, that the America was, I mean, famously in a sort of speeches by the president, that was looking for revenge, weren't they? They were.
Yeah. And like you said, that's that one part in this, isn't it, when the CIA want to use him to get after Bin Laden, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, exactly.
Pointing into that perfectly, really.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Yeah. Did you wonder when you read it whether he would go that way?
Yeah, I did wonder if it would be that strong. That's for sure. You know, I thought it was just going to be purely. I didn't think there'd be any kind of CIA bit worked up into it or anything like that. I just thought it'd be purely gangster related. I didn't think they'd be looking at any kind of political edge to it.
Yeah. Because there's a number of great scenes with that. There's two scenes with Microchip which are done in like real deep shadow, you know, like the light shining down from above on them sort of thing.
And yeah, in Frank, the warehouse.
Frank looks fucked, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's been in a war, hasn't he? You can tell it.
Yeah, and he's had a dum-dum bullet to the face, and his face is fucked.
Yeah.
And he says, and Microchip says to him, look, you know, these are your alternatives. You walk out of here and you die, or you come and work for the CIA. And he tries to sell it. He does well selling it, actually.
Yeah, he really does, doesn't he? He gives him that sort of that way out, as you think. And I think it did appeal to him a little bit, but there's the obvious response, the fuck you response, isn't
it? Yeah, because when you look at it, you think, oh, Punisher, he either accepts the deal or he dies.
Yeah,
that's the initial one step forward on that interview. You see that coming, and then what you begin to realise that it's the old Rorschach thing, isn't it? That if he doesn't accept it and he doesn't go along with them, Microchip knows that he's going to die.
Yeah,
because Frank will kill him.
Yeah, exactly. So he knows he's not going to come out of it well, one way or the other.
Yeah. And then Frank tells him a story, doesn't he? Do you remember that bit where he tells him the story about something that happened when he first was about to become the Punisher? It's about the man who's beating his missus next door.
Yes, yeah. And he ends up throwing him out the window because he'd had an affair, hadn't he? And
That's right.
He was basically pissed off because he threw his marriage and his life away, whereas Frank had it ripped from him.
Yeah. So those who haven't read that part, Frank's in amongst boxes. He's buried his family and he doesn't know what to do. And the neighbour comes around, I think with a bottle of wine or something, or a bottle of scotch, and says, look, you know, how are you doing? And Frank's sort of very sort of quiet. He's not the Punisher we know at that point. And he says, "Oh, by the way, I'm splitting up with my wife. I met a woman at work, and we've got, you know, I like her better, so I'm leaving my family." And Frank takes that badly and sees it as not as an affront to him, but he sees it as a crime almost, doesn't he?
Yeah, definitely a waste.
Yeah, and he sees someone who's got a family and can't keep it. Well, he lost his tragically, and yeah. He says, "You better go.
Yeah,
I'm giving you a chance." And then he says the guy doesn't go, and so Frank throws him out the window. But that's mirrored with Microchip, isn't it? So he says to Microchip, "Look, the police and the wise guys are coming, and the CIA are coming. If you go now, I won't kill you."
Yeah, yeah.
Really, really interesting. Really, such a great story point there.
It really is. Sort of the relationship between them, you can tell that, you know, they've worked together before, and he is giving him that chance.
Yeah.
He wants to give him a chance, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, not necessarily taken.
Yeah, so the story goes, we can spoil it a bit, I'm sure, but he goes, but Microchip says he's not going, and he just sort of starts loading a gun, I think.
Yeah. That's going to help him out.
Yeah. And he knows from that point, Microchip knows he's going to die, doesn't he?
Yeah, he knows that Frank isn't going to just let him go from that once he's given him that opportunity.
Yeah, and all because he tried to get him to join the CIA.
yeah, he's trying to do him a favour as far as he thought, but Frank was having none of it.
Yeah. And, of course, everyone then arrives, so we get the Mafia wise guys arrive, we get the CIA in a helicopter, and Pitsy turns up as well, who's named after Pitbull, I suppose.
Yeah.
Just
love that scene in the warehouse, that fight.
Fucking you know, hell.
it's just so visceral, the whole fight, and you can tell it's just two hard old bastards, you know, who are just going at it, hammer and tongs. Yeah, brilliant.
And it goes on for ages.
Yeah, you got sort of 5 or 6 pages worth, haven't you? And it sort of comes. There's a little intermission while there's a helicopter gunship going on with one of the CIA guys.
Yeah.
And then we're back into it. But it's an amazing bit. And I do the scene with them pair when it sort of comes to the sort of, you know, fuck this shit. I love that bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you hear the phrase they're tearing lumps out of each other, you know, it's kind of a shortcut to say they had a big fight in it, really. These bastards are literally tearing lumps out of each other.
Absolutely, yeah. And I love the point, you know, it's got that bad that sort of, you know, the almost indestructible Frank, you know, he just actually says, you know, to himself, like, this isn't good.
Yeah.
You know, he's ticking off the bits that have gone, you know, that's a rib gone, and, you know.
I think he says it's not broken, it's actually gone.
Yeah. He's took a rib out. Yeah.
And the geezer, he picks up Pitsy, doesn't he? He says, "Oh, fuck all this," and he picks him up.
Yeah.
Isn't that where he goes? Yeah, that's during the fight. He goes, "Arsehole's been eating his spinach."
Yeah, that's it.
And suddenly, I realise that La Rosa has based him the whole time on Popeye.
Yeah. He's got that look about, especially with that fucked up eye he's got, you know.
Yeah.
It comes at him, and then obviously Frank does the big. Run at the window and throws him out onto the railings.
Yeah. Now, that's what I was going to mention that one when we got to favourite moments in art, so we might cover that one now, because what happens is he throws him out the window, and La Rosa does a good job of, you know, it's energy, constant energy and blood, and you feel the tension, and you literally don't know who's going to win the fight, do you, at this point, because it's a kind of a new Max series and people are dying left, right and centre. And he picks him up and throws him out the window. And you see him land on the railings, so he's impaled by about 4 railings through him.
Yeah.
But without any foreshadowing or any anything like that, Frank just lands on top of him.
he follows him out the window, doesn't he?
But you don't really see him following him, do you? You just see him landing.
Yeah, you just see the feet on his chest.
So it wasn't enough that he's impaled him, but just suddenly, like, totally instinctually, without any emotion... He thinks I'll jump on him. That'll properly kill him.
Yeah, that is an amazing scene. You know, it's the one that you look back and you think, has he done that?
Yeah.
And I just love that whole build-up to the scene, you know. I mean, it reminded me a bit of in your Atomic Hercules, you know, where it's like, you know, fuck this for a game of soldiers, when he's taking on the mutants.
And sort
of,
thank you, man. Yeah, that's very kind of you.
Frank's had that bit where he's been battered to shit. and I think Pitts is coming at him with a shard of glass to shank him.
Yeah.
And he's just, all right, you know, fuck this. And he sort of takes the glass through the hand so he can stop it. And that's when he picks him up, you know. He's just, I think any person that's come to the end of the tether can sort of, you know, absolutely relate with that, whether it's ended up in chucking somebody out of a window or not.
We've all been there. And he sort of, but as he picks him up, the geezer's still going, let go of me, and stabbing him in the back.
Yeah, he's taking him out in the kidneys a bit, yeah.
Genius. And then, but he's not even fucking dead at that point.
No.
So we go through some more sort of trials and tribulations of Frank in this, like, one man, or him and Microchip against an army of cars and helicopters. And the geezer comes back, he turns round, and there he is standing there with, like the railing sticking out of him, still looking to punch him.
Yeah, he's going to take him out with the railings, I can only imagine, you know. But Frank does finish him once and for all, though, with the, I think it's about his last shotgun round.
That's right.
That he's got. Yeah. And LaRosa leaves us in no doubt what's happened to him.
Yeah, but even, I think he shoots him in the face, and he takes a step forward, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's still walking towards him.
Yeah, so he's like, he's such a brainless, like, just crazy person.
Yeah, just a machine, isn't he?
Yeah, he's kind of the equivalent of when you chop a chicken's head off and it runs round for 5 minutes.
Yeah, so just absolutely.
Running on instincts and adrenaline and aggression and, you know, just a fight, you know. Yeah, he's good. He is really good. I liked Ink as well. I thought he was a good character. I think don't they do something to someone and the mod, because they get imported in from, I'm going to say Boston, isn't it? Because he takes
it
the
is,
piss
isn't
out of
it?
Accent.
Yeah, they're taking the piss out the accent. Yeah,
Because most of the mob people have been killed, so they import these sort of the black sheep of the family who'd been sent off to Boston, and they keep doing the most gruesome, disgusting tortures and murders. And the bloke from New York who's driving around has to keep stopping the car to throw up.
Yeah, that's it. Because there's the one CIA guy, isn't there? The sort of they catch, and I think it's Pitsy again, sort of says, you know, if you don't shut up, I'm going to cut your balls off put them in a cup.
Yeah, that's
and that
right.
is
yeah.
exactly what he ends up. And there's a, you know, it was a brilliant shot of the CIA guy coming back to O'Brien, the female agent, you know, with it, literally with his balls in a cup in one hand.
Yeah.
And he's hanging onto whatever's left in the other hand. Yeah.
And she sort of looks in the cup, doesn't she? And goes, oh, what's that?
Yeah.
So, I mean, is there any particular art bits you liked? Anything in from an art point of view that you liked?
I mean, for art, there's so much, you know, sort of when you think about those sort of visceral sort of moments. But I think, to be honest, it's the last image, book six, because I think not only is it just amazingly drawn, the energy of a shot there, you know, you got Frank stood over Micro after they've had this sort of final talk discussion, and he just ends it for him and blows his head off, you know. But it's just the look on Frank's face, he's got no emotion whatsoever, and you just know that he's killed the sort of the nearest thing he's got to a friend, you know. It's just an amazing piece of art anyway.
I think you're right, man. I also think it's kind of the nearest we'll get to Dredd in a Marvel comic.
Definitely. That sort of chin and the face, the look on the mouth of Frank, if you put a helmet on the top of that. Exactly, you're right.
Yeah, and an attitude and build, even. I mean, they're both built like fucking shithouses, aren't they?
They've really made him hench in this one, haven't they?
Is that, what's hench mean? Is that, I don't know what that means.
Muscular.
Oh, okay, right, cool. Yeah, good.
They've really gone for it in this version of the Punisher.
I really like the opening, I know it's a funny one to say, but I really like the opening massacre.
Yeah, the mob that was actually like my second choice, to be honest.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the mob party sort of carnage.
Yeah, so it's a double page spread and it's only got 5 panels in it, and it just is, it's the reality of, is it a Gatling gun or whatever it is he's firing? It's the reality.
It's an M60, I think.
It is the M60,
like,
right?
Yeah.
With a sort of belt feed of like huge bullets, and it's the reality of what a gun does to you. I'm slightly pissed off with current movies and current comics where people seem to get shot and they say, "Oh, it's only through the shoulder," and they fucking wander off. You know.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen anyone who's been shot, it goes in small and comes out large, is what they say.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
And it'll blow the whole of your back out. You know.
Absolutely. I don't know if you've seen it, really. I mean, this is diverging a little bit. But Gangs of London.
Oh, I've not seen that yet. No, it's on at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, no, because you can. I think you can download them all. You know, is the way it is these days. Now that has gone the opposite way. I've watched that with mouth open, because that has gone right back to, like you say, the gunshots. Nobody is walking away with a little wound in this.
Yeah,
their heads getting blown off left, right, and centre. It's just really well done.
And he chooses to shoot people in. There's a couple of shots in where he shoots people just through the gob.
Yeah, there's somebody's jaws blowing off, isn't it? And tongue hanging out, yeah.
I love that. I don't love it, but I think it's. I like the way that he just fucking goes for it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Real.
Yeah. And then I know some of the. I found a couple of the bits, I think, from a sort of down point of view on the art. I found Microchip to be somewhat more photorealistic than I did a lot of the other characters. I wonder if that's the point.
Yeah, it could be, couldn't it? Because he's the most real and perhaps honest part of the whole lot.
Yeah.
Because he was honest, wasn't he? He was telling him why he was there and what he was doing. So,
yeah,
perhaps it was done for that reason.
He's the only sort of realistic part of the life. He's the only person who can... I mean, he's the lone sane voice with the CIA.
Yeah.
He's the lone sane voice with Frank as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And like you said, that the way they have drawn him in the shadow in pretty much every scene, isn't it? It's either the warehouse or where he's kind of in the hotel room. It's just beautiful use of the shadow.
Yeah, really is. Yeah, he's a master of that, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
My other favourite sequence is the prostitutes, obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously. He's got like an informant who's this older fake redhead. Who's grotesque. I mean, this is what prostitutes are like. You know, they're not strippers. You know what I mean? And he goes to chat to her, and she's sort of half-heartedly smoking and giving him information. And he just looks. He's this is the thing that always makes me laugh about the Punisher. He just does his jacket up, and nobody recognises him.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's sitting on a bench, and he says to her, "How old's that girl?" And she says, "I don't know." And And he says, has he got her hooked on anything yet? And she says, I don't know. And he just gets up, grabs this sort of horrible sort of street hood in a yellow tracksuit by the necks and takes him around the back of the building. And you know he's killed him.
Yeah, that's it. And sort of gives her the wedge of money, doesn't he?
Yeah, with like this sort of diamante money clip.
Yeah, you know what he's doing.
Yeah. So he says, give her half of this and put her on a bus to Poughkeepsie. Tell the new guy to watch himself.
Yeah.
And it goes quiet. There's a quiet scene of her just sitting like on a bench looking like awful. And then she is, she just goes, that was not my fucking fault.
Yeah. It is a really nice moment, isn't it?
Yeah. I could read Punisher like that all day. You know, if it was Punisher was like that, I would read it non-stop. Absolutely. Every day. Yeah. Cool. Is there any other moments you'd like to talk about in this one, Duke, Gaz, or anything else that sort of...
Obviously, yeah, we talked about that sort of fight with Pitsy. That was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And, you know, that sort of, like I said, that moment where it's just the fuck this. You know, I've had enough. It's sort of like, he doesn't care that he's getting sort of stabbed in the kidneys with that piece of glass. He just wants this done, live or die. He wants him done.
Yeah. Did you see the, I know we don't often talk about movies, but I might mention this. Did you see the Punisher Warzone movie?
Was that the Dolph Lundgren one?
No, this was the third one. I forget the name of the guy who was in that series, Rome.
Oh, well, now the one you mean. Yeah, I didn't see that. I know the guy you mean. Yeah, he's a big fella, isn't he?
Yeah, physically, a good take for him, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
He looks the part. I think he's got that broad shoulder kind of thing. Where did you go? Did you go anywhere else with the Punisher and read much after this, or...?
But I'm working through all the Macs, to be honest. I've just got the fourth volume, the fourth and final volume for my birthday recently. So that's
this run, isn't it? That's the...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
All the sort of Garth Ennis ones is in that, where he meets Barracuda and other...
Yes, sort of, yeah, and it's got the Russian thing. Is it the Russian human trafficking thing in it as well?
Oh, yeah. That is a brilliant story.
Yeah.
That's where I am at the minute with the Punisher. But I really enjoyed the TV series.
Right. Yeah. Well. Yeah. I didn't mind it.
I think
you can
see the influence of Garth Ennis's Punisher.
Yeah, you really can.
Played that for sure.
Yeah, he's a funny one, Garth Ennis, isn't he? Because he's taken over an established character and he's really made it his own.
Yeah. Because a lot of people now look at the Punisher as that character down there, not the sort of spandex-covered one.
Yeah, they do. Everybody's forgotten that. Yeah, they forget the Mike Zeck stuff. They even forget the sort of Mike Baron stuff, Jim Lee stuff, all those guys. And they go straight to Welcome Back Frank and Punisher Max, I think.
Yeah.
I'd recommend The Platoon if you get a chance. I think that's really good. I would say one of my favourite books of last 2 years ago. And what you get as well is, I remember looking at this book when I first got it in issues and thinking, oh, it's not Steve Dillon, is it? Yeah.
Right.
I mean, you must be a Steve Dillon fan from 2000 AD.
Oh, yeah. From like 2000 AD days, obviously. And then he's running The Preacher as well.
Hellblazer's great. That's another great one of his, you know, with Garth again. And I remember seeing it and thinking, oh, that's not. But I warmed to it. It took me a while, and then I warmed to it. And the stories carry you on with this. They're so well done. I really do think Garth Ennis is probably our greatest English comic writer. You know, genuinely do. I think some of the stuff he's doing, like Sarah, which he did with TKO.
That's another on my wish list.
Oh man, so good. Yes, absolutely brilliant. And then I think it's Jason Aaron who does a run, which is I think the second or third Punisher Max series with Steve Dillon. They do it.
Right.
And that a lot of that features Bullseye and a couple of other characters, and it's really good. I sort of recommend that to you as the next thing to go to. It's got that. Dillon's can be brutal, but there's you can be cutting someone's head open, but there's still a sort of weird dark sense of humour to his work. I think you know.
Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful stuff as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and genuinely some of the best facial acting I think has ever been in comics. You know, I really do.
Bye.
Cool. Right, we're almost here. So, a couple of questions for you. Do you ever reread it? Is it a book you ever go to and reread?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the first time I've gone back to it, you know, obviously to, you know, have a reread for us having a chat. And it was so easy to reread again.
Yeah,
and it just put me in mind of, you know, the sort of, again, as we talked about, the old 80s sort of action films. Yeah, you can stick one of them on any time and rewatch it. And this is the same. I think you get something out of it. You can read it on a sort of highbrow level, you know, and look at it, or you can just go in for the blood and guts and enjoy it.
Yeah, it's a book that whole big passages, you don't have to read any words. You know what's going on. I think it's a good sign of certain types of comicking is if you can do that. I think it works. I'm just looking at the fucking page now where the woman listens to Frank through the door.
Yeah.
He says, you heard his voice? Yeah. Everything you hope for, I imagine. She goes, is there a minibar here? And he says, next to the stereo. He said, you'll need a key. And she says, and then she opens it just to stick her head in there because she's feeling so damp after.
it's even when she's been shot. You know, it's like, I'm so wet now. It's such a great character. The bit I liked as well was, again, going back to Pitsy. I mean, Pitsy was such a great character.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
They got the mafia guys from Boston. They're in a pool hall.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of young women, you know, playing pool. And I think one of them nudges his elbow and he's taking a shot. And you can see them talk. And they don't actually mention it, but you just see, you know, he's about to sort of swing the club around the head of one of these girls.
Just immediate movement to violence. I mean, in that way, he's kind of the reverse. Well, he's not the reverse. He's just the criminal version of Frank. Because Frank he'll just immediately do something, you know, because it's
absolutely
that's what needs to be done. He just does it. And Pitsy, he's probably been in and out of prison so many years. He's a grey-haired older man, isn't he? He's just like, fuck it, you know, just do it, you know.
Yeah.
Doesn't care for it, and you see those. I mean, having drunk in a few rough pubs in my life, you see that.
Oh,
you know, you see blokes who just like punch someone, you know, because they took an extra shot or moved the ball or something. You know, it's like that. Yeah. The other page I wanted to mention with the art wise is the one where she finally meets her colleague and he's had his balls cut off and he's holding his his crutch, and you can see at that point to me that Ennis is writing because he's got that shortcut with Dillon almost. That could be a Dillon page. I can easily see that as a Steve Dillon page. You know, it's got that sort of comedic goriness.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it is amazing. I love it.
I heard a quote from Garth Ennis today where he was talking about, somebody said to him, oh, you're doing a lot of work with Avatar. And he says, the thing is about Avatar, they never censor anything I do. And if you read Crossed, you know, being beaten to death with a horse cock is the least of that book, you know. And he said, there's nowhere I could go. I forget the name of the guy who runs the company. He says, there's nowhere I could go that he wouldn't think wasn't enough. You know, he's the bloke who owns the company is clearly a psychopath, is basically what he's like. He says, I can go as far as I like and he'll never censor me. And I kind of like that, you know.
Yeah, more power to him. Yeah, we need a bit of that because everything is, I know it has to be that he's politically correct and that kind of, it's nice to have this kind of little throwback to a more violent time.
I can see this is the sort of book that Dan Butcher would love, I've got to tell you.
Yeah. I can imagine, yeah.
Cool. And on the reread, you enjoyed it. Is there any weak parts you thought in it at all?
To be honest, really not. I just enjoyed the whole reread all over again. Every scene in it, like you say, that there's something going on. Yeah. And it's just so well written.
Yeah. And you got it in trade, is that right? I know you sent me a picture when we were trying to... Because that's the thing about Marvel series, is you said to me, should we do Punisher Max issues 1 to 6? And I'm like, oh, God, which one does he mean? So you have to sort of clarify. Even when I pressed record, I thought, I hope we're talking about the same series here.
It's always the trades I go for at the minute. Obviously, sort of coming, you know, late back to all this.
Yeah.
The beauty of it is a lot of these things are a lot cheaper now, and you can perhaps pick them up on eBay.
Yeah.
And so, most of mine are trades at the minute, I must say.
Cool. Right, I'm going to pause there just for a second to do our advert. We've got a sponsor. The seas are looking bluer and the sky is empty of fuel-belching jets. The time is ripe to get out amongst nature. Why don't you see if you can bum a dolphin or get oral pleasures from farm animals? Why not try bestiality? It works for David Attenborough. Brackets, disclaimer, David Attenborough does not know anything about this advert. Yeah, thank you for that, Gaz. Sorry to interrupt you.
That's fine. Yeah, I'm all for it.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I've got a Welsh friend the other day, and I said to him, can you remember how many women, how many partners you've had in your life? And he closed his eyes and started counting, and then I realised he'd fallen asleep. I'll get a letter about that, I'm sure.
I'm going to say nothing. I work with some Welsh people.
You shag one sheep, there you go. Yeah. Good. Okay, so out of 10, I've started doing this out of 10 thing and it's kind of evolved. So out of 10 for the writing, let's say the writing,
yeah, I mean, you've got to, for me, I've got to put it up there as a 10. You know.
Cool. Yep, I'm going to go with you on that one, man. I think the writing is spot on. It'll never be Shakespeare. It'll never be Ayn Rand or, something like that. But it does exactly what you want. It's exactly... Yeah. He understands the form, doesn't he? Completely. Yeah. I mean, the cojones on the man just to do him jumping on him, suddenly his feet appear on top of him. It's just brilliant,
Yeah, absolutely.
Art-wise?
Perhaps sort of annoying.
Nine.
Annoying on the art, yeah. I mean, obviously, there's sort of scenes there that are just absolutely amazing, like we've talked about, but there's one or two where, there's perhaps a lack of background, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Seems to have took a little bit of a shortcut here and there, but apart, that's picking flies, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's moments where the faces aren't always... There's some pages, there's not a huge amount of detail. For a couple of them, I'm guessing that Lewis LaRosa was using... real people, or there's a couple of that seem to, I would say probably Microchip seems modeled on someone, if not he's a genius at capturing that exact thing as he turns his head, because it's an easier thing to caricature someone and draw them than do them as so fully formed. Every time Microchip's face appears, you think, all right, that's a really in focus moment in the comic, which thematically we're both realizing that's the point of it, I suppose. The lone sane man, a man who's come to his senses, I think, as well, is what they're saying. Yeah,
for sure. But I think that the one bit I liked as well, I think it's in book 3, and when they're in that room talking, and it almost looks like Clint Eastwood that he's drawn.
Yeah.
In shadow, and that is a nice one as
well. Yeah, the art, the blue and greys of that scene where they're just looking at each other across the table, and that's not an easy thing to write, that to and fro, because Frank says virtually fuck all.
Yeah, he's just staring at him, isn't he? Yeah.
Very clever. Okay. The only time I've ever actually seen you in the flesh, Gaz, was when you walked past the table, and then I realised it was you later on at a comic con that we don't name that happened once in Birmingham.
Yes, yeah.
Are you a big con goer or?
When I can, yeah. I mean, obviously this year it looks like we're going to be a bit screwed one way or another, you know. But, yeah, when I'm able to get there, we definitely try and get to them. Try and avoid some of the, you know, the ones full of cosplayers and that kind of thing.
Do you know what? It's weird, actually. It seems, I don't know, I hate cosplayers. I go on the record with it. But I actually find them sort of slightly more palatable at 2000 AD festivals. I don't know why. I just sort of...
Yeah.
I wonder if it's because I know that they're also readers, you know.
Yeah, that's it, because they're really into it, aren't they, rather than just following the zeitgeist at the time. Yeah. We went to one, me and the missus, for it was an MCN in Birmingham.
Okay.
And it was just after Suicide Squad, and we started counting Harley Quinns.
Yeah, I've been there, my friend.
We got to, this was by the morning, we got to 60, and we just stopped because it was ridiculous, you know. so that sort of thing does get on my tits.
I think you're right.
I love getting to admit that one in Birmingham that won't be named, you know, it wasn't great, but at least it was pretty much just a Comic-Con, you know. And there was
I'll make you right on that. And I often think some comic conventions that are quite quiet gives you the chance to sit and have a chat. So I had a long chat with John Wagner, I had a long chat with Dan Cornwall. Yeah, these sort of people. That was quite a good two for 2000 AD people. That was quite a good one, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I did the same myself and got to stood there with Al Ewing and John Higgins for
sort of
10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I forgot Al Ewing was there. Al Ewing does a lot of conventions, and I think if he was ever and he never seems to get like a huge take up. But I think if he was in America, he's beloved out there. Yeah.
Exactly.
He's written the X-Men and all sorts out there. I think he would be mobbed. But over here, he sort of sits there looking a bit like a sort of weird scarecrow.
It was really good. I think the balance of that one as well was nice with, you got sort of some of the indie guys there. Like I was up chat with Mike Garley because enjoyed some of his, like, 32 Kills.
Samurai Slasher is a good book.
You know, so it was nice to be able to sort of chat to those guys a little bit and get a bit of an insight from them as, you know, somebody who's coming it back into it now. It's really interesting.
Good stuff. And I know a lot of his stuff's on Comic House. I think you can get Mike's stuff on there. Have you got any sort of grails that you want to get hold of now? Any what's next on the trade list or what you're looking forward to reading?
Well, I started the Southern Bastards. That's one that I've sort of want to get a few more of. I've got a couple. Is the inevitable Comixology sale. And so
I
generally sort of top up a bit then, continue with my sort of journey into Europe comics as well.
Good man. Yeah. What have you been reading there?
It was Desert Star.
Oh, mate. Good shout. Oh, I love that so much.
I think it was hearing you guys talking about it on the podcast, you know, and I thought, oh, let's have a look. Because I really got into Westerns of late, the sort of the trash novels, that kind of thing.
Oh, mate, now you're talking my language. I've been reading a load of the Edge books. Is it the Edge? Been reading them.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, these are all like, you know, Lone Sheriff, Rogue Lawman, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But to be honest, to sit down sort of like working in the NHS and that, as you know, and sort of to sit down on a lunchtime and you just sit and you're lost in it. It's an easy read. Yeah. It doesn't require you to think, you know. And it's brilliant. So I thought that Desert Star and the art in that just blew me away. So
it's a beast, isn't it? Yeah, it changes issue 3, it's not him issue 3.
Okay.
Yeah, first two issues is him. Yeah, well, you know, if you listen to the Awesome Pod, you know that we like absolutely worship the geeks. You know, it's brilliant.
Yeah. Stuff, it really is. But that's where I'm at the minute, just trying to get hold of whatever I can. And I recently got all of the Walking Dead.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Via Humble Bundle, they'd done a bit of a sale on that. So I got, I think, the whole lot, 36 of them or something like that for 14 quid.
Wow.
So,
well, that'll take you a while.
Not bad.
Do all that in a day, man. That, you'll be depressed as fuck.
It would be a bit, wouldn't it?
And you've also, of recent times, taken to writing this blog. Did you want to mention anything that you've reviewed recently, or you're reviewing soon?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've touched on sort of Garth Ennis's work a little bit with the Punisher. So the background behind it is organising sort of some of the 2000 AD get-togethers. We get the fans together. We call it the Eastern Contingent. Yep. So, I mean, it's an excuse for a piss-up, basically.
Yeah. What's that phrase? 2000 AD fans drink more than the Queen Mother, I believe is the phrase.
That's about right. So we organise them and we meet up in Cambridge, you know, and have a few drinks and talking to a lot of those guys and some of the guys on the 1977-2000 AD group, you realise that a lot of them, their comic experience has been 2000 AD and purely that. So my idea is, yeah, my eyes have been opened in coming back to it, you know, what a depth of comics there are out there, is to try and sort of write this blog. I don't pretend it's anything special. I'm just a bloke writing.
Yeah, same as all, man. That's what we do. Yeah, it's just fun, isn't it? Yeah.
That's it. And it's nice for me. I find out a little bit more about the comics. So I've touched on Sir Grant Morrison's, I can't remember. It's the one in space, the hot space horror.
Annihilators, no.
Nameless. Nameless.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, that's what I was thinking of, actually. Yeah.
Touched with Chris Burn. You know. Yeah. I've ventured recently into sort of a bit of manga.
Oh, okay.
What the cool kids are reading. So had a little look at that. And it's just little things like that. So that's Gazza Reads Comics.
Gazza Reads Comics. Would you say blogspot.com? Yeah, ideal. Yeah, I love the old blogspot thing because you can see your readership and you can see where people are reading it and stuff like that. It's kind of nice to know where you're reaching out to and stuff, I think, sometimes. Yeah.
Exactly. It's, you know, like I say, if nobody else enjoys it, I'm enjoying doing it anyway.
Exactly, man. Exactly. Yeah, cool. And where are you otherwise on social media? I can't remember if you're on Twitter. And I speak to you on Facebook, don't I? But are you on?
No, I don't understand Twitter, I'll be honest. Facebook just under Gary Hill. But I say the Gazza Reads Comics, and I'm admin on one of the admins, I should say, that on the 1977-2000 AD Facebook group.
Nice.
You can sort of look up on Facebook as well the 2000 AD Eastern Contingent, and that's where we just put together, you know, any of our get-togethers, try and do them a few times a year, that kind of thing. Last time we had Stephen Austin, the art droid, came along and we're doing, you know, sketches for beer, which was
nice.
Pretty
nice. Yeah, we like that. Yeah, see, you got to love the 2000 AD community. I'm a member of the message boards. I don't go on there because, you know, I'm frightened. But the I remember I went to the 40th and I've been to the, is it called Lawless? I can't remember what they've changed it to now.
Yeah.
I've done a couple of them and they've always been brilliant. Really good get-togethers.
It's you know, it's all the love of the comic that they're there for.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it?
That's the beauty of it, yeah. Like you say, anybody who dresses up, it's dressing up because they love that character.
Yeah, it is.
You can't pull that character.
Yeah, exactly. And there's none of that sort of screaming and running around and OMGs.
No.
Yeah, that sort of crap, yeah. Okay, well, we're becoming grumpy old men. That's fine. Good, thanks, man. That's absolutely brilliant. Well, I hope people find some pleasure in watching men have their brains blown out and being dropped onto... sharp objects, which is what this comic's about, which is sometimes is all you need in your life. And
I did nice easy read.
Yeah, I did Arkham Asylum with Helena last night from Art92. We talked about that, and that's a head fuck. It's nice to get to something that just fucks up heads. There you go. How did that sound?
Yeah.
Good. That's what I'm gonna write that in the summary. I'm gonna just do my little outro. There you have it. Hopefully you'll get something from it. You can find me normally at neverironanything.blogspot.com. Buy my comics, neverironanything.bigcartel.com. Atomic Hercules still on Kickstarter. We're doing well, but if you want to have a look at it, come over and have a look. It's a lot of fun. Follow me on Twitter, SOYSEZOHYZ. If you want to listen to a proper podcast, go to awesomecomics.podbean.com or on the podcast catcher of your choice. Thanks for coming on, Gaz. I really, really appreciate it, man. It's been good. It's a nice, refreshing little fun chat, that one, I think. You know.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And I say, for the work you and the guys do on the awesome podcast.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah,
no,
we love it when people listen. Yeah, it's really nice. Yeah. And as they say, the rest is history.